nobody cares about making movies about people anymore. All they care about is zombie takeout. What's up? Welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listener submitted from Bodo. In reference to our last episode, our review of From Beyond, I mentioned during the episode that Stuart Gordon and Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton had collaborated on a couple of other Lovecraft-inspired movies, one of them being Castle Freaks. And in reference to that, Bodo said, I took the bullet for watching Castle Freaks. Slow, incest-laden. Did I mention slow? Oh, by the way, slow. Slow. Predictable. Did I mention slow? But not that bad. So, yeah, thanks, Bodo. I think we'll skip that one. Particularly for the incest part.
The incest. Alrighty.
Yeah, I'm not so much worried about the slow, because, you know, people have different ideas about slow and, you know, whether, how well it may work. The incest part, I think I want to shy away from. And without any further ado, on to this week's movie, which is from 1986, FX. This is our Brian Dennehy tribute. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the 80s. It doesn't seem like that long ago.
Yeah, we called that home for 10 years, didn't
we? Yeah,
we
did.
And also brought to you by Tidy Whiteys. Put some fucking pants on.
Although, in my defense, the 80s that I lived in was more of the neon geometric, you know, nylon 80s.
Mine was more of
the spandex hair, you know, hair metal 80s. But
mine was more of a wood panel.
Oh, okay. The kind of still 70s, 80s.
Yes. Long into almost into the 90s. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so the impromptu plot summary, we have a special effects guy who loves his work and seems to have many talents. he gets offered a job to stage an assassination. And honestly, I thought the whole thing was absurd until at the end, or after the movie, I actually saw something where this is kind of based on some factual information.
Really?
According to one FX guy said, yes, he'd been hired by the government repeatedly to stage different things. I'm like, okay. Maybe not in the U.S., but maybe abroad. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the U.S., he didn't say. But for it to make sense, it had to be apparent what he was hired for, of course.
Right.
He's hired to stage job.
To the assassination of the guy from Law and Order.
Right. Oh,
he's always the guy from Law and Order to me.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the cop he plays in Law and Order.
Briscoe. Yeah, okay.
Yes. I'm just not enough sleep lately. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he gets hired to stage the assassination of Briscoe and
Jerry Orbach playing a mob boss.
Yeah. I know pretty much the gang that couldn't shoot straight guy is now 13 years older. Uh-huh. So he's been running the mob for 13 years and he's worked a deal out now to not only get him in witness protection, but to run off with some money. Of course, that's revealed later, but no shit, that's what's going on here. So it goes off pretty much as planned, except they make the effects guy believe that maybe he actually killed him because they were kind of messing about with the gun before the job went down.
And they attempted to kill the effects guy right after the staged assassination.
Right. He's really not the smartest guy in the world. What's with this plastic down here? It's like, oh my God. And then calling the other guy, the guy higher up, hey, your underling tried to kill me.
Yeah.
Oh.
The guy who works with blood packets and squibs says, what's with the plastic?
Right. And so he tries to kill him too. And then he finally gets it that he's been screwed over. And he, so of course, to his effects box or bag or whatever. And he comes up with different ways to avoid the authorities and avoid the killers. And
Gets his girlfriend killed, ropes in his innocent assistant, risks her life for a while.
right, he gets his girlfriend killed, and then I don't know why he thought they wouldn't that wouldn't be the first place that they would go to look for him.
It's not like the guy who actually initially tried to kill him was at his apartment the day before.
Right, so they knew plenty about him, and finally, like ridiculously late into the movie, you get Brian Dennehy.
About halfway through, I checked. Not
Yeah,
quite
it is.
halfway.
It is. It's halfway. It's about halfway through that you find out that they're the cop who put this mob boss away and was pissed about this whole thing getting fucked up. Smells a rat. Checks out the murder or checks out the effects guy's apartment. Makes a really super fantastic deduction that I'm kind of on the fence of. Is that could he really have figured that out or not? So there was a certain pattern of bullets on the mob boss. He sees that certain pattern on the dummy in the effects guy's apartment and puts two and two together, or I don't know, some other variables together, and comes up with four that these are that maybe he did this on his actually first he okay first he thinks the effects guy might have really went off and did it for real, but you know it's still that was his first theory, so maybe, but then why would you need to test out that precise pattern? You know, it's like look at that. So he winds up getting kicked off the force because he flies by the seat of his pants a little bit too much.
They had to cram one more cliche.
Yeah, he didn't get yelled at by his by the lieutenant, which was a little refreshing. But again, that was a cliche by this time. That was like a known, I mean, this is around the same time that the show Sledgehammer was on, and they had the, you know, the lieutenant that with always the veins popping out, you know, making fun of that cliche. And of course, our effects guy, Raleigh, he plots a revenge using effects to break into the Department of Justice's house. And hilarity ensues.
And I know it sounds like we once again picked a bad movie for a tribute episode, but Dennehy makes this thing watchable. Butted a brain for
Jesus
me.
Christ. If he, you know what? I'd recommend this movie if Dennehy were in this maybe 15 to 20 minutes sooner.
I'm gonna start off with some trivia, though. The unsolicited screenplay was written by two novice writers, actor Gregory Fleeman and documentarian Robert T. Magnuson. Producer Jack Weiner read their script, which Weiner probably read their script, which was submitted as a low-budget TV movie, and felt that it should be made into a theatrical release. Weiner and his co-producer Dodi Fayed hired Robert Mandel, an off-Broadway director. They did not want to hire an action director, but instead wanted a director who would bring a realistic touch to the film and make the audience care about the main character. Mandel accepted the job because he wanted to dispel the perception that he was a soft, arty director. Initially, he was not impressed with the film's screenplay, which he felt was not well crafted, but felt that it provided a lot of action and a lot of things that I did not have under my belt. In preparation for the film's action sequences, Mandel studied the car chases from Bullitt and The French Connection to pull off the film's special effects. The producers hired John Steers, who had worked on the first eight Bond films and shared the Special Effects Academy Award for A New Hope. So everything but that last part was a comedy of errors.
Right. I mean, this could have been, if this had been directed by, in the hands of someone that knew what they were doing, this could have also worked as well.
Oh yeah. Better writers, better mostly cast, Dennehy aside.
I feel the writers could have, a director could have smoothed over a lot of the stuff the writers
Fair point, fair point.
had neglected. I think the
Yeah.
writers gave us enough to go with, actually. But I just think the directing was just,
But
some of
okay,
the.
an unsolicited script from two novices didn't think it was worth it, but decided to give it a shot anyway, brought in an off-Broadway director.
Yeah, that's why would they do that? Is
And
it
the
really
director
the.
saying, well, it's not that good, but there's lots of action, and I want to change my image, so I'll do it.
And but then you expect to have like some really solid performances, and other than Dennehy, who
You
you get the
know.
feeling can direct himself pretty
Yeah, pretty
much,
much. I
I mean.
mean, Dennehy's always the same guy, but he really grounds anything he does. Like, he can do something incredibly ridiculous, but just his presence will ground it.
Well, I felt, I mean, he was completely different in this than the guy in Silverado, who was,
Yeah, fair.
bit of a, bit of the scoundrel, This guy is just more of a single-minded,
But his character, his persona, he's always just kind of that grounded, no-nonsense guy. You know?
True. He is always of the earth.
Yeah, that's just who Dennehy was as a performer.
I got to see him perform live a few times, and one of them was Desire Under the Elms, which is just a monster of a play by O'Neill, and he was just this angry, crotchety old guy.
But he's not one of those actors who completely transforms each time. You know,
No.
he's still very similar.
It's still him, and
But
it, but it's amazing how he did it. It's
yeah,
still him.
and his performances are always completely believable, and he always brings a touch of realism. He's done some really absurd things, but he brings some realism to it.
Although
Now
all the stories of people who've met him, and I met him briefly too, he seems like the nicest guy in the world. Like just like, hey, slugger,
Well, he kind of always frequently played hard asses.
Yeah.
And people who play those kind of characters because they get it out of their system at work tend to be nice, it seems. You know, people who play villains and hard asses and, asshole characters tend to be nicer people. It just seems to be the case. Like, Kurtwood Smith always plays an asshole. Apparently, he's like the nicest person in the world. The guy from That 70s Show, Red.
Oh, right. The president of the Federation.
So getting back to the movie, it has this long opening credit sequence, which is really quaint right now. But now it seems really quaint.
And I mean, right away, I'm like, I don't remember this movie meriting such a dramatic intro musically. And even after the movie, was like, I was right because the two really don't go together. It's a very light-hearted movie in a way.
I do like the opening theme though. And you mentioned that you don't remember it. I'd never seen the movie before. And this is one that I'd always wondered about. Like, 'cause I remember when it came out in the 80s and the idea of a special effects artist in this murder movie intrigued me. Sorry if I hit the mic there.
I think I remember the sequel more than this.
Oh God.
I think the sequel was much more of a buddy cop movie, which is kind of what I was expecting here. And because it's kind of billed that way, that the two of them are working together to solve a crime kind of thing, but they're working separately.
Yeah. And the series apparently is that, yes, this got a series. More on all of that in sequels and remakes. But I was always kind of intrigued by the concept of this movie, and I always kind of thought about watching it. I was not surprised it was this bad after watching the trailer. But like I said, Dennehy makes it better. I will say I did like in the opening, I did like how the city skyline kind of faded in from a drawing. And then
Yeah.
it starts off with this movie within a movie, a shooting in a restaurant, which was
Right.
nicely mirrored later. The pyro in it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, you knew it was a movie, of course. I mean, it was very, a lot of it was very predictable, but it had to be predictable because what else would explain what's going on, kind of thing.
You know, waiters walking by with something flambéed, you know, something on fire on a platter, and it knocks over onto a guy, and the guy catches on fire completely.
The fish shot the hitman shot the fish.
Yeah. And then, you know, they cut the movie, of course, and we get the effects artist. And the small talk at the beginning of the movie was not sold at all.
Yeah. A lot of the supporting cast, well, Brian Brown and the supporting cast are pretty
painful
to watch.
How did he have a career after this, or before this?
He really didn't, though. I mean, he did Cocktail, and then he did the sequel to this.
No, I checked.
And that was pretty much it.
No, he's been working consistently since then. Mostly in Australia, I think.
Yeah.
Because I had to check IMDb to see if he had done anything else. He's been working consistently. Maybe he just phoned it in on this one. Maybe he's actually a much better actor. I don't know. I haven't seen him in anything else. I haven't seen Cocktail. I generally avoid Tom Cruise movies.
I think I did see that one back in the day. I think everybody, you know, something about some of those movies or Tom Cruise of that era where everybody had to go and see a Tom Cruise movie.
I avoided them. I still haven't seen even Top Gun.
Well, yeah, that was mandatory viewing for us in the eighth grade. I mean, that was everybody had to take their call name, kind of, who was Goose and who was Iceman and all that nonsense.
I don't know. Maybe it skipped my area. Maybe it's an age thing. I mean, I'm only a year and a half older than you. Yeah, if you've seen us drink that in. but still, it didn't seem that necessary to me. And it's Cruise. I saw him in, like, I think I saw, like, a clip of Risky Business and was like, no, I'm not interested in this guy. But yeah, the small talk at the beginning was horrible. Even when they brought in the cop who was, or the Justice Department guy who was trying to pull him in, he was even kind of pathetic.
So you understand the novice director for action movies, at least, not doing action well.
What's the excuse
for not doing acting?
Why can't he do dialogue when he's an off-Broadway guy?
Yeah, but still, you know, there's no excuse. You know, some of the bit players, the supporting roles of this were just really bad acting.
I did appreciate the girlfriend when she, you know, as long as she was in the movie, because, you know, she's an actress in the movie he's working on, and she really played the part of an actress.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever, you know, knew any theater people in college or high school, she was an actress. You know.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, she was. So is she Natalie Portman's mom or something, by the way? I don't know.
I noticed that.
Didn't she look exactly like
her? Oh, yeah,
there
was a resemblance a bit, yeah. And it sounds like Raleigh makes our kind of movies. Too bad they're not real.
Well, I just remember Mama was real.
It was?
Yes, it was.
I need to see that.
We passed by that in the video store many a time, and we kind of chuckle at the title because, of course, I mean, especially after being a drama student, knowing that there's an "I Remember Mama," that's what the title is the play on that.
Right? Yeah. I need to find that. Then we need to review that.
Yes, that is a real movie. And I don't know about the others though, but I imagine they are.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was pulled right back into the 80s when they wanted to bring him in to help with someone who was going into the witness relocation program. That was a huge trope back then.
Well, though, I mean, they were acting like they'd never heard of it, though, by then. And I was kind of like, really? I'm trying to think of what kind of stuff had been out by then.
Yeah, this was 86, and I think that trope goes back to, like, 83 or 82. Maybe 84. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. I think this was an era when people were really kind of into what effects artists do.
Yeah.
It's kind of like right before this, you had the Fall Guy when people were kind of all into what stunt people do.
That's right. So they had,
you know, the stunt guy who was a bounty hunter. Now they have, you know, the effects artist who was framed for murder. you know, the Justice Department after him.
A Mr. Wizard by chance.
Yeah, basically. I do like that he had to be talked into it. He just didn't just jump, you know, when they offered him the deal.
But so easily manipulated. Oh, yeah. We're going to get this other guy to do it.
Right.
Like, he's really going to just fall for that? So, yeah, they make him really stupid.
Mm-hmm. And in the decade we've been doing this show, we've talked about Planet 70s quite a bit.
We have not talked much about Planet 80s, have
we? When did Planet 80s become a thing?
This was like an episode of Stranger Things, wasn't it?
Well, that's true, but that's real early 80s. That's almost 70s.
They're into 84 in the last season, so...
Yeah, but like the first season was 83, 82, which is like kind of transitional. This is 86. This should not feel like another planet.
Ah, but it is. Eighth grade.
Well, and then I realized it was 34 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
And I was pleasantly surprised because it looked like they were setting up this random sex scene, like, right after he does, you know, when he comes back after they offer him the deal, after he takes the deal.
Yeah.
He looks like they were setting up a random sex scene between the effects artist and the girlfriend. They spared us it. They kind of just cut to right afterward when he's pondering the deal and he calls his assistant.
So how was this rated R, Benny, by chance? What merited the R rating?
I didn't realize it was rated R. I can't think of anything. There's no nudity. There's not a lot of violence. Right. And the violence in there is really cartoonish.
Yes.
There's not even a lot of profanity.
No. It was very weird. The MPAA works in mysterious ways.
Mm-hmm. Having him tie his assistant's legs while she's asleep when he, you know, went to pick up the box was weird.
Yes.
They were setting up this, like, practical joke war between them. She, you know, trips a box that she hands him the next day with, like, white powder. And it was just those two pranks and that was it.
Yeah.
It didn't become a thing. So it just seemed weird and unnecessary.
And the assistant had to have been the worst actor in this film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was the one doing most of the small talk in the beginning, too.
Right, right. She was just painful to watch.
Yeah. And, okay, so right after he, you know, the way he escapes after they try to kill him, after he fakes the murder, he kills one of the guys, you know, they're wrestling with the gun, the driver of the car gets killed. The car drives into a fence, kind of hovers over, you know, kind of teeters over this precipice. He gets out onto a sidewalk, and this homeless guy starts yelling about how, you know, there's no parking after 10. That would have been funny in the 80s.
Yeah.
The homeless guy.
New York parking laws and homeless guys enforcing them.
And also, this was back when, you know, a movie could get away with saying the Justice Department were murderers.
I thought the guy Lipton was from the one from Son of a Beach, but no, he was.
He did
not look
familiar. I couldn't place him though.
He done bit parts here and there. In fact,
saw him in a bunch of stuff. Don't really know his name.
The other guy that they sent after him, you know, had done a number of bit parts too. Mm. Usually a hitman.
Okay.
The one that was in the pond.
Right, right, right. And then mercifully, Denny shows up.
Finally.
He's the only one who made an effort, except the girlfriend. I mean, she made an effort in a very over the top kind of way, but then he's really the only one who was really acting.
I mean, he was a cop. There's no like questioning about it. There was no like, oh, do you really believe this guy could be a cop? No, I was like the mustache and just the demeanor and everything. Like, I knew fucking cops like this.
And although there's one scene that again really dates the movie, this other cop is helping him with, who, you know, works in the computer section of the department, is helping him get some information. And he kisses her after she like breaks up some information for him. Find something for him. If that was today, he'd have been fired in a heartbeat.
They do put their relationship as quite ambiguous, don't they?
Well, I mean, if they had established that they're a couple, then that's fine, but that would have played better. But
Like, you get a feeling that they're kind of a coworkers with benefits sort of thing,
perhaps, perhaps.
just from the way they interact with each other.
That dated the movie, and just his character's sort of casual sexism really
Oh
dates
yeah,
it.
a cop.
Yeah, exactly. Although the scene when Tyler calls in, when he's in the building, you know, the call is coming from inside the building. Yes, they played that chestnut too.
Can't believe they did that too.
Lipton is using one of those shoulder rests on his handset. Have not seen one of those in ages.
Well, right. I mean, I probably sometime in the early 90s.
And of course, Raleigh's in disguise because that's what he does. Looks like Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
I mean, does effects guys really like they're not into costuming?
That's true. He's not an effects makeup artist.
Right.
He's the guy who works the squibs and the explosions and all of that.
Yes.
So yeah, he also apparently does effects makeup.
And stunt driving.
Yeah, that too. I gotta give it credit, an 80s movie pointing out that a computer can't do something when Dennehy asks for a split screen. That was nice.
That bought this movie a brain, honestly. The fact that they used computers realistically, like, and they knew what they were talking about when they had computers.
But you know, this is the age of, well, this is actually a little bit before Enhance. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. Although,
Oh yeah, the whole like it's some picture that enhance.
yeah.
Okay.
I have to wonder why they made Tyler think he killed DeFranco if they didn't really want him dead. If they were trying to knock him off, you have the effects guy do it, you frame him, that's great. That makes sense. They didn't actually want him dead. They were going to run away with him and get the money. But why make Tyler think he killed him?
I think they may have been hedging their bets. I don't
Maybe.
know. I don't know if they really went all through all that much to convince him that he killed him. I think they were just, making sure that nothing went off without a hitch there. I think he was just checking to make sure there really were blanks in there and that Raleigh wasn't double-crossing them. But of course, this is something they couldn't do in a present-day movie because internet geeks would recognize an effects guy.
Yeah, true. And I have to say, at least Raleigh grew a conscience and dumped his assistant, like let her go,
Yeah.
and she protested. You'd th she was all into it by that point, but he had her get out of the van and drove away.
Yeah.
It's
And
just,
mercifully to the audience, too.
yeah, true. It's just too bad Misty never got Misty MST3K never got a hold of this one, because I would
Yeah.
love to see them Misty this.
I mean, obviously they needed to get together earlier in the movie instead of her.
Also, I noticed when they, when you think they've killed Raleigh, he's holding a gun. He's laying on his back holding this rifle when he's supposedly dead. Like he's clutching it.
Yeah.
And then DeFranco's death scene was just comically bad. And it's Urbach. He's a good actor,
Yeah.
but he can't do a death scene.
I don't think he ever had to do one.
Probably not. And okay, so where did the head of the Justice Department live? Was he still in New York City?
I think he was upstate.
Upstate.
I think
Because
that was
the
the thing with the state
Okay,
troopers.
because I was just going there. Because they suddenly turned into Mounties.
Right. So they're more upstate. They're kind of like, well, we don't have a helicopter kind
But
of thing.
they had the hats and the coats, and they really looked like Mounties.
I think we've skipped over somebody though.
Okay.
Of course, the cop Murdoch, the rival cop.
Oh,
Did you
yeah.
recognize him?
Again, looked familiar, couldn't place him.
Well, that guy I didn't have to look up. That of course was Nathan Arizona.
Oh, okay. Right.
This is a shakedown.
And
Guy dresses like a rock star.
then
And then the scene where Dennehy is coming to get information on the Department of Justice guy head to get his address from him, when he just opens that door and that glare he gives him, it's just I would like to. I mean, that should be a meme in itself, just for you, like you're gonna fuck someone up.
This is a reaction gif of that.
Yes. Just get that Dennehy with the mustache staring through the door, just like, whoa.
I did think that Raleigh faking his death with prosthetics over his pulse points was a nice touch. That
Yes.
was clever.
How an effects guy would come up with that, I don't know, but hey.
And then, of course, him and Dennehy run away to the Alps and, get the money and
Strangers in the Alps.
gotta reference the title. If you don't get the title of this episode,
This is what happens when you find a stranger in the
watch
Alps.
the TV edit of The Big Lebowski. Now, you mentioned that
Man.
this was possibly based on real life events.
Yes. There is an effects guy out there saying that, yeah, he'd been hired to stage
Okay.
things.
Because it also bears a resemblance to 3 Days of the Condor, apparently. If I've seen that, it's been too long, but that
Oh,
resembles.
wow. Yeah, I haven't seen that in probably decades.
It was also the film debut of Angela Bassett.
Wait, what?
Angela Bassett made her debut in this movie as a TV
In this
reporter.
movie?
Yeah. I didn't notice her
No
either. She played a TV
shit.
reporter.
I can't remember a TV reporter in the movie. Oh,
I
just somebody on TV,
yeah.
probably in the
It was a
background.
bit part, but yeah, it was
Oh, okay.
Angela Bassett's film debut.
That's really cool.
Yeah. On a sequels
But
and remakes? Or.
I mean, the criminality of this whole movie is the fact that Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy, did you count how much stage time or screen time they shared together?
Like 10 minutes? Maybe.
I got, if it was 2 minutes,
Yeah, probably you're, yeah.
you're being generous. I
Probably, yeah.
mean, if you're counting like them being strangers in the Alps,
Right.
you're probably talking maybe three or four
Right, yeah.
tops. But for a movie where they kind of are billed
Yeah,
together,
right.
it's like, what the fuck were they thinking?
And that leads nicely into sequels and remakes. A sequel, FX2, The Deadly Art of Illusion, was released in 91. Yeah, that is very 91 for a title. And a spin-off TV series entitled FX the Series was produced from 96 to 98.
Now, if they could have just gotten the Coens to have directed this, goddamn.
Despite the studio's financial troubles, MGM announced in 2010 that it had planned a remake of FX with Robert Mandel directing again. The new
Why?
movie was originally slated to be released in 2011. Let's hope that stays in development hell.
Were they gonna bring back Dennehy at that time, or
I mean, that would
was
have
that the plan?
helped. He could have pulled off the role. I don't know if Brian Brown would have worked in that part.
So the sequel, like Dennehy's just, a private eye or whatever instead, and it's kind of what you thought this movie was gonna be. The two of them, work together to solve. I mean, it's a great idea for a buddy cop
Did
movie,
you see the sequel? Because you mentioned the sequel earlier.
I probably did
You don't
maybe
remember it.
in the theater 20,
Okay.
what we almost 30 years ago.
From what I was reading about the series, that is what the series is.
Yeah.
They solve crimes together. Completely recast. It's not Dennehy and Brown.
Oh yeah, the series, yeah.
They're not going to do TV. They're not going to do syndicated TV in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s.
I was gonna say Dennehy probably did a lot of TV still.
Well, sure, he did a lot of guest appearances, but he's not going to
Yeah.
be a regular on a syndicated show. One of those shows that went right into syndication.
He was like a not a regular, but an occasional on the blacklist,
Yeah, he's done a lot of other TV stuff,
which I
but
never did see how that ended actually, because my DVR went kaplunk or gone.
On the Brains?
On the Brains.
I'm going 3. Like I said, Dennehy gave it a brain. And the rest of it was, eh.
Yeah. It's frustrating because they could have had a really good movie here, mm-hmm. except, man, the dialogue is just painful to get through. And, you know, it's really weird because the action scenes are good.
Yeah.
There's like a weird cameo too by the World Trade Center in the scene where he's stealing his truck back, by the way.
And it's a good concept.
And yeah, it's a great concept for a buddy cop movie, except the buddies aren't together. Mm-hmm. This is like a weird prequel.
Apparently that's the series and maybe the sequel.
It's a prequel to something that didn't happen, but it's kind of like this origin story of how these two got together. And
again, maybe in the sequel, you don't remember it and I know nothing about it. And apparently that was the premise of the series.
Yeah. The sequel, I think I enjoyed more if I can remember back 30 years, but yeah, I'm right there with you. 3 brains.
This is the second time since we've come back from the break that we've agreed in the middle. We never agree in the middle.
I think these were, you know, pretty, pretty good calls, though.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with either of our reviews. I'm just, it's weird. We agree at the ends of the spectrum, never in the middle. So what have we learned?
When someone tries to kill you twice, you're not paranoid.
And I learned that I have no idea why they based the series on this movie and how the hell it lasted for 2 years. I'm tempted to watch a couple of episodes.
The premise is strong, I think. It's just this was not executed well.
Yeah, maybe the series has better execution, hopefully. All right, so until next time, when we will hopefully, finally be reviewing Heavy Metal 2000.
Oh, man.
Our Julie Strange tribute. Not that it's a particularly good movie. I don't think it's probably any better than this. But
you know,
it'd be nice to get to it.
They say Dennehy, you know, the one role he wanted to play and never got to was King Lear, but...
Ooh, that would have been brilliant.
After seeing this, I think the role he really should have played was Sherlock Holmes.
Ooh.
Because it was, his character, you kind of got a Sherlock Holmes feel from him in this. Yeah. And, you know, he made some really wild deduction, you know, leaps in logic.
And Dennehy as Holmes would have been
At first, I was kind of like, could he really have gotten that, the fact that he was still alive just from that, you know? Mm-hmm. and of course, the gun pattern, you know.
Dennehy as Holmes would have been a complete twist on the character, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, the you know, Bandersnatch or Cumberbatch, that's
Cumberbatch.
It. Actually, that I knew it wasn't Bandersnatch, but it was the closest I could get. I wasn't intentionally making a joke there. but his take on the character was very traditional. He's very kind of upper crusty and stuffy kind of character.
Yeah.
Watson is the kind of, you know, the mensch, the normal guy.
Right.
Dennehy as Holmes would have been brilliant.
I think we really missed out.
Yeah. But anyway, until we hopefully finally review Heavy Metal, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.